What's up? Welcome to Two and a Half Beards Podcast. I am Jaden Johnson. Here are my co-hosts.
Daniel Hansen.
And Trevor Porath.
So, for any of you that have been listening, which I think is just a few, we have some sad news.
Shout out to Derek.
This is our very last episode. As it turns out, Two and a Half Beards is also the name of another podcast.
Where they talk about naked grandpas.
I don't know what they talk about. I haven't actually listened to an episode. It's probably a great podcast. And we had a logo design in mind. We had everything that we were thinking of is exactly what this other podcast did. So we're going to be coming up with a new name. We're going to be completely changing things around, fixing things up, and this is our final episode of the trilogy known as Two and a Half Beards Podcast. But we're still going to talk some sports here today and hopefully be able to make the most out of this last episode. So, how was you guys' weekends?
Yeah, the football wasn't as good as last weekend, so.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. It was kind of refinated.
I could think of one thing that would have made my weekend better.
The Panthers winning?
Okay, I can think of two things that would have made my weekend better.
Sex?
That's not what I was thinking of. I was thinking about the Aggies. But I can think of a lot more things that would have made my weekend better now that I think about it. Maybe like a big ol' juicy steak.
Some Herms.
Oh. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. But the biggest thing. Okay, not the biggest thing. But a really big thing that could have made my weekend better.
It was in the top 10.
Probably in the top 10 things that could have made my weekend better is if we would have won that freaking homecoming game.
We should have. Like, we flat out should have.
Yeah, the refs. Can't blame it all on the refs. There were a couple plays that kind of swung the whole game. Also, there were some stupid, plays that we did make and not lining up correctly on offense twice in a row, not doing a legal formation, which, I did go back and watch that, and it is correct. Those were illegal formations. So, there's part in that one on the two good plays in a row.
I have always been someone who I've always felt like you can't blame a game on the refs. Well, I feel like that you can, but a lot of people blame games on refs. BYU fans. I always just kind of scoff at that because most of the time, maybe a ref did make a bad call, but you put yourself in a position where that was going to affect you, and you put yourself in a position where you could lose because of it. I don't feel like that was the case this weekend, though. And as wrong as it feels to be putting so much blame on the refs, I think that they take a big part of it.
I think in this game, let's face it, it was a touchdown game. So it's not like only one thing could have won this game for us. If one of those calls goes our way, I think we win the game.
One of the three.
Yeah, one of the three goes our way and the countless others that weren't called as well. But then also, you can say, if we lined up correctly, we would have won that game. So, there's not any one thing we're saying, the refs are the reason we lost, and if it wasn't for them, we would have won. We easily could have won that game. And I think that's why I say we should have. Because, we made stupid mistakes. The refs made really stupid mistakes. The play calling in the red zone was dreadful. Just kind of across the board, we didn't deserve to win that game, really, with all the mistakes we were making, plus the refs.
It's like when Steelhammer got called for that targeting, the ref closest to it wasn't the one to throw his flag. It was the actual referee that had to throw it after Matt Wells went yelling at him, at the ref.
Yeah, and after you saw Kent Myers' lifeless body on the turf, it's ridiculous they didn't automatically throw the flag there, but.
I want the job of a college football ref. I don't know what they make. I know the NFL refs do pretty decent for themselves. I don't know about a college football ref, but you know what? that is the only one of the only jobs where you can just be awful at your job and still keep going to work. Because I haven't seen one bit of an apology from the Mountain West Conference. It's not going to happen. You know it's not. But even I went back and I rewatched the game, and even the commentators from ESPN that were watching it, even Air Force fans knew, especially on that touchdown play by Ronquavion Tarver, everybody knew that was a touchdown. Show me one person that can actually disagree with me that that was a touchdown. I don't know if that person's out there.
Who's the Air Force coach again? What's his name? Calhoun?
Yeah. He disagreed with a lot of
He disagreed that the sky was black for that game. And this was a night game. I'll admit that.
Yeah. It was one of the most pitiful performances by a group of referees that I've ever seen. And I've watched a lot of football. And it's not just that there was one thing that went wrong. It's not just the touchdown that was called off. Those things are inexcusable with the instant replay that we have now, in my opinion. But even if just one of those things was off, there was so many just terrible calls.
Well, can we just like talk about quick how bad was the replay official there? I mean, to have all those calls where you have multiple angles of plays and to get arguably all three wrong, how bad do you have to be for that to happen?
You know, it's not fun to make fun of blind people, right?
I'll make fun of Stevie Wonder all day long, okay?
Okay. I think that's who it might have been.
It might have been, actually.
Well, and you know, for the, I don't know if you knew this or not, but for the fans watching on the Jumbotron, they're allowed to only show one regular speed play and one in slow motion, and that's it. Just from the same angle, those refs are watching from all kinds of different angles. Everyone in the stadium, bias aside, everyone knew that that was a touchdown. And then going back and looking over and over again from different angles, looking from the ESPN cameras, I mean, there's nothing that they could have seen.
Yeah, I remember watching the Arena Football Championship, and all the refs, when they go do a replay review, you hear exactly what the refs are saying. You see exactly what the refs are seeing, like right there. You see them standing in front of a TV screen. I honestly think college football, and NFL for that matter, should be exactly the same, because it's ridiculous.
Oh, I like it. Absolutely.
That we just don't know what the refs do. We don't know how they looked at that video and be like, that's not a catch. It's just ridiculous.
You know what I like about rugby is in rugby, the official is looking at the Jumbotron that everybody in the stadium is looking at. And he talks to the person that's in charge of that up in the, where they control that. And he's like, okay, show me this angle. And so they show the angle on the Jumbotron. So everybody's in the stadium seeing the same thing that the ref is seeing.
I like that. There's so many ways that they could change it, but you know they're not going to.
That, it costs too much money.
Because you know what's going to happen is those refs, they're going to go home, sleep in their beds, and go out next week and officiate another game with absolutely no repercussions. And
it's actually funny. I saw the day after this game, I saw a commercial for Toyota where a ref made a bad call at a football game, and then his car broke down, and these kind people that happened to drive Toyotas picked him up in a rainstorm and took him home. And I was dead straight thinking, I am not picking that ref up. Just leave him out in the rain. Your fault for buying a Honda.
Yeah. I think that we could sit here and bag on the officiating all day. But nobody... I think that everyone's in agreement with us. We're not debating any point here. It is what it is. I'd like to get an Air Force fan's take on this, or sit down with Mr. Troy Calhoun, the head coach, and go at it with him.
Well, I think the refs called a very good game. I think it was fair for both sides.
Oh, you think so?
Yes. I mean, the better team won, of course.
But let's look at positives. I saw quite a few. Actually, okay, let me ask this. Do you feel better about this loss? Not better about the loss, but do you feel better about the team after this loss than you did after our win against Arkansas State?
In the passing game, yes.
Overall, looking at the team as a whole, do you feel like this was a better performance by the team? And do you feel better about what the team did than the previous week?
Well, also, they did keep a regularly 469 rushing yard team to just over 200 rushing yards. So, in a way, that is a positive, I believe.
I think there's a double-edged sword here. I think the team played much better against Air Force than we did against Arkansas State, at least when you include the second half against Arkansas State. But also, do I feel better about the team? I would say no, because we don't really know about Devontae Mays and Dallin Leavitt right now. And without those two guys, the team is kind of a lot lower than we would place them if they were on the team, of course.
How do you feel about the performance, though?
Well, performance, like I said, we played better against Air Force, I think. I mean, when you look at the competition, Arkansas State went and lost to like an FCS team this week. And we only beat them 34-20 with a touchdown in the last minute to make it look better. Air Force is going to be a bowl team. They're 3-0. They were a really good team last year as well. So, I mean, the fact that we only lost 27-20 is pretty good in and of itself. The fact that you can make a very justifiable case that we should have won it, I think that bodes well.
I don't disagree with you. I'm on those same lines that... And the reason that I even thought about this is because after last week's win against Arkansas State, I left feeling like it was a team that had a lot of potential. It was a team that just went out and flat out underperformed. This week, I feel like the team went out there and they gave it their all. And we saw some very good football from a lot of players. Like Trevor said, from the defense that held Tarver. Air Force's rushing game to just 213 yards.
Yeah, just over 200, yeah.
Which, I mean, against a regular team, that's nothing special. But against Air Force, that's remarkable. Ronquavion and Tarver, there was a lot of positives that we could take out of this game. And so, overall, I do feel better about the team. But I also have some concerns that I didn't have before. And that goes to the injuries as well.
Let's put it this way. The 14 points we gave up on turnovers, you take those away, we win the game.
No doubt. Well, and football's such a game of
what ifs,
and it's a game of having things fall your way and where small little things could turn out to be so major. And for Utah State, it just wasn't their night. It seemed like every small thing, whether that was an officiating call, whether that was
we forced several fumbles, but I don't think we recovered any, did we?
Yeah, whether it was right place, right time. There was a lot of things where, to be honest, I feel like this is a team. I feel like we outperformed Air Force, and it feels ridiculous to say that in a game that we lost by a touchdown, but I feel like we outperformed them.
I think there's a couple drives where Air Force dominated us, I think. I mean, they ran all over us on occasion.
In the first half.
Yeah, first half, there's a few drives here and there where they had those pitches where they just sent it out and they got like 10 yards automatically, it seemed. But for 75% of the game, yeah, I think we were the better team. I think, I mean, I've already said it several times. We should have won that game.
Yeah, there was, you know, like I said, with the turnovers, there was one where they got the fumble that Kent Myers fumbled, and it was pretty much in there. You know, they were 20, 30 yards out from scoring a touchdown. And then the other one, when Kent Myers threw the touchdown or the pick, we were on a nice roll there, Rice going down and get a touchdown, but then he throws that pick. Even though it was down in our end of the field, they got that momentum swung so much when they got that turnover that they just were able to run down and get a touchdown right there.
You can't overlook the impact of having the momentum going your way and then just being completely shut off and going the other way.
Yeah, like that Tarver non-catch.
Exactly.
It's 14-3 if they rule that correctly.
And Air Force is bad at coming from behind.
Yeah. And then you look directly after that, what happened? Oh, well, another review, first of all, where they kind of got wrong with the Andrew Rodriguez catch. And then Air Force just goes down and scores a touchdown, and they don't trail after that. So that's really the turning point of the game, is that review, and then the tide just turns against us and we just weren't able to withstand.
This is one of the this was one of the more frustrating losses that I can remember in a long time for USU, because there are losses where I came away, like last year against San Diego State, and I just said, okay, you know what, we're just not in the same league as them. We're just not that good of a team. There are losses where I came away thinking that, you know, just one step from being really good. This loss, I came away just feeling frustrated. And the first place that everyone wants to point that is, well, I think naturally the first place is probably the quarterback.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous. And I think Kent Myers was great. I'm not even going to go farther on that, because just look at his stat line and look at the offensive line he was playing behind. I think Kent Myers was great. And the second place is the coach. Maybe those are flipped. Maybe the first place is the coach and the second is the quarterback. But, and I saw all kinds of criticism from Matt Wells this week. I'm not sure that I'm ready to join in on the on the criticism and the heat that he's taking, because I feel like this was most of the game he did make some pretty good play calls, but it was very frustrating when we got into the red zone and the play calling would totally change, and there were just a few places where I was just dumbfounded by the call.
I think the game that this most reminds me of is, do you guys remember the Wisconsin game several years ago?
Yep.
Where we
all too well.
Yeah. Lose on a missed field goal, like 37-yarder or something like that. Just that level of angst, I guess, on something we should have done, but we didn't. That's kind of what this game kind of was.
And then on the year before that, when we lost to Auburn because we couldn't recover an onside kick.
Oh, man, that hurts.
These are painful memories. After that Wisconsin game, I remember there was a watch party up here at the student center, and I went to that. They had free pizza and a whole bunch of students there. They had it up on a big projector, and everyone was super into the game. It looked like we're going to upset this Big Ten team.
I remember going nuts when Webb had that catch.
Just going crazy. I mean, it was a wonderful game, and then leaving after missing that field goal, I was so angry. I ran around campus.
I remember that year because, I mean, it made it worse that we went 11-2 that year, and both of our losses came on missed field goals. And we're like, well, I just don't even want to think about it. It was just a bad, bad year. But
it was a great year, but
it was a great year, but it was losses. Frustrating.
And to be honest, I feel like this loss, even though it wasn't, you know, it wasn't against the Power 5 team or against BYU, you know, a rival or anything like that, it was just an incredibly frustrating loss. And one of the things that really adds to that is the injuries. And so, I mean, nothing official has been said yet. We haven't heard anything from Coach Wells, but from a few different reports I've seen, of which I think are pretty legit, it looks like Dallin Leavitt broke his, what was it?
Broke his ankle, I think.
Broke his ankle, and he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks. And Devontae Mays was an MCL sprain, so he'll probably just be out a few weeks. We'll see. But who do you feel like, because Dallin Leavitt, he's obviously the emotional leader of the defense, and not just the emotional leader, but he's the one out there that's pulling everything together for the defense. Who fills his spot?
I see at any spot on defense that might be the best for us to cover, because centers is pretty decent at least, and then you also have Rockamore. So, I mean, they're definitely not Leavitt level, but they're serviceable.
Do you see either of them becoming, in a sense, like the just the leader of the defense, the quarterback of the defense?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell, you know, because he's just taken so much control of that it's, you know, no one's really stepped up to see it, because he had that. So we're going to have to wait. I think we might have to wait till the next game to really see who does that.
Out of necessity, one of them might, but I also just like to point out, after Leavitt went out, the defense was pretty solid, like even possibly even more solid, at least against Air Force, than when Leavitt was in. I mean, they had that one touchdown where it was a really short field, but after Leavitt, I was worried that Air Force would just run all over us, and the defense did solid. So
yeah,
I think we'll see a little bit.
And that's nothing against Leavitt, but, you know, to be honest, I feel like we've got a good enough defense, and we've got a good enough defensive coordinator, and we've got enough depth that we're going to be okay. I wouldn't be surprised, though, to see a couple of our linebackers step up, see Brock Carman really step up, maybe see Derek Larson, some of the more experienced guys on defense.
I think less than just one person stepping up, I think kind of going Ewing theory on the defense a bit. The star player goes down, everybody else kind of picks their game up. I think you'll see a really good defensive performance next week against Boise. Enough to win, maybe not. But
so, what are you expecting against Boise?
I'm expecting we go up there and we'll, you know, I believe they'll play their best, but it's gonna be a tough one up there in Boise with, you know, just losing one of your best defensive players and one of your
and Devontae Mays,
and it's gonna be hard, I think. But, you know, like we can do always, like they've always said the past few years, next man up.
I think we'll cover the spread. We're 20-point underdogs, but I think we'll cover the spread. But I'm not sure if I could. I don't think we can win up in Boise right now, the current state of the program, but I think we'll give a good effort.
I don't know if we cover the spread, to be honest. It's gonna be tough. Boise is very, very, very good at home. They're going to be not very happy about losing to us last year in the way that they did. They're a very good team this year. I do look at it that Boise, they just played Oregon State, and yeah, they won, but they won by 14 points. I feel like we're about on par with Oregon State.
I think we might even be
better. We might be a better team than Oregon State. It's hard to tell. So there is hope. I think that we could stay in it. I really don't see us coming out of there with a win. I'm gonna say 21 point Boise win.
When was the last time any Utah team has won up in Boise though?
Been a while.
BYU beat them last. Was that in Provo?
That was in Provo last year.
Yeah, just they like play we up beat in them here Boise in this year. So it's been a while.
Well, it's been a while. They just never lose at home.
Hardly. I mean, I think probably someone needs to correct me on this, but I think the last one might have been Nevada with Kaepernick. Actually, I'm not sure if they've lost a home game since that.
I'll have to look into it. Something, just before we move on, something I'd like to mention is there is a possibility that Boise State, who is still undefeated and is now entering into conference play, and San Diego State, who is in the exact same situation, and they're both already nationally ranked, there's a possibility that they could both go undefeated this season since they don't play each other, and those two could meet in the Mountain West Championship.
Yeah, pretty much after like Boise got through Washington State and their non-conference, and after San Diego State beat Cal, I kind of was thinking there might be a chance. Now that we can see that they're both really good teams, and we know that's a really good chance that happens, I almost want that to happen, but I also want Utah State to win those two games against them. But
if that cannot happen, if Utah State is to lose those two games, it'd be cool to see.
I mean, you think about it. They'll by the end of the season, if they're undefeated, what do you think they're ranked? Like somewhere between easily. Like 6 and 10.
Yeah, something? I'd say easily top 12, probably top 10, each of them.
Yeah, because what do you think is it does have a better teams at the Mountain West or the
AAC?
AAC.
I have to say the AAC for now, top to bottom.
Yeah, top to bottom. I mean, they've still got Houston. Yeah. So
it's, you know, Cincinnati is a very good team. Navy's a very good team.
They don't so have San Jose year, State or Wyoming or New Mexico. So I mean,
yeah. There's.
I mean,
top
as,
to bottom, I'd take the AAC. But
like, as disappointing as we are, we're still like third, fourth, or fifth best team in the Mountain West. So,
but the dream scenario for any mid-major, well, I guess it's not mid-majors, that's basketball. Any group of five football fan, the dream has got to be that happening and Houston running the tables. So you've got Houston, San Diego State, and Boise State all in the top 10, top 12 at the end of the season. Again, it's all speculation. I just love looking forward. I love...
Imagine a Houston versus San Diego State playoff semifinal.
Okay, that's too far. We got to move on. So we got some other good stuff going on with USU sports. Trevor, you were at a couple of the soccer games this weekend, yeah?
I actually went to the Sunday match against the Wyoming. Utah State did a good job. It was 0-0 at the half, and we came out in the second half and just lit it up and scored three goals. We had three different players score those goals. Hammond, the other two just kind of went out of my mind there for a second. But we also scored three against Colorado State on Friday. But Colorado State did score one on us, so we went through the weekend with a 6-1 score in favor of the Aggies. So
that's pretty decent.
They're doing all right. They're 6-3 or something like that. Maybe 6-4.
I believe that's what it is. And so.
So have they started? They haven't started conference play though, have they?
Yeah, they're 2-0 in conference.
Oh, because those two were conference games. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean that's always you got to cheer for all the Aggie sports, even if soccer's not your thing. You got to love when the Aggies have success in something like that. The volleyball team, they're getting started with their conference play. They just started last week. They had two matches during the weekend. Went to Nevada and won three sets to two, which is awesome. Nevada's a pretty solid team. And they went to San Diego State, got up 2-1, and then ended up losing 3-2. So that's kind of a heartbreaker. But they got a pretty good team. I don't know how many of you have really followed the women's volleyball team in the past, but last year they were not great. And this year they've already surpassed the win total from what they were at last year, just at the beginning of conference play.
That's what happens when you have a young team, though. You can be really, crappy one year, and then you get a lot of returners to come back the next year, and you've bonded from that full year of playing together. And so you get better because, your teamwork gets better. You know your other teammates, how they play, what they're probably most likely going to do to what you're going to do.
Absolutely. It's just a fun team to watch. They're really a lot of fun. And so they got two home matches this weekend. On Thursday, they're playing Colorado State, who is, I think Colorado State was picked to win the conference. So that's a huge one for them. And Wyoming on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they're going to be able to continue this newfound momentum, I guess, into the bulk of conference play. But yeah. I think we got a lot of national sports to talk about. So props to the volleyball team, props to the soccer team, and of course football and all those other sports. But we got some major stuff going on in the MLB right now. Past couple of days, everyone's probably heard a little bit about Jose Fernandez. We'll get to him in a second. But the playoff picture is really starting to shape up.
So help me understand this. I am not a baseball guy. It's not a secret. I really don't care for baseball. I'll watch the playoffs and I'll watch the games that really matter, but I'm not a fan of having such an extended, so many games in the season and so long. The games are so long. And to me, it just kind of gets, I just kind of lose focus. I just kind of stop caring about baseball. Yeah,
pretty much baseball fan population jumps from like 1% to like 95% as soon as the clock turns like October. So,
because when there's actually something on the line, that's when it's entertaining to watch. So help me understand this. I understand. I mean, they've got a week left in the season.
That last games are on Sunday, so there's about six. So we got six games left. Okay.
I mean, it's really winding down. So help me understand what's going on here. And
well, divisions are pretty much all wrapped up. I mean, the Red Sox are the only team that haven't wrapped it up, and they've got one game left to win out of like six, so, and they'll secure it. So
if they don't win their division, then that'll be really bad for them. But they are going to playoffs for sure.
They
but
do have a playoff spot, and they pretty much have divisions along with Indians, Rangers, Nationals, Cubs, and the Dodgers. And there's still about like eight teams or so that are kind of jostling for wild card stuff, but we pretty much know the teams in right now.
So just give me an idea here. Who are the favorites to win? I mean, the Cubs, I hear all kinds of stuff about the Cubs. So, I mean, I've got to figure they're probably the favorite, but who else you got?
I would say the teams you got to look out for, I mean, you got the Cubs. I mean, they're the dream team right now. You also have the Giants. You can never discount some even year magic going on. They still need to get in the wild card. But anytime you have Madison Bumgarner on your team, you've got a shot.
Yep.
And then I would say the Red Sox are probably only the other team I would keep an eye on. They've got a massive offense, probably the best in the MLB. If you ask
about
me.
The Nationals,
they're not quite there, you know, related to the Cubs. I'd actually take the Dodgers over the Nationals this year. They might not have like the one guy because they have more of a couple, you know, not top tier, but lower top tier guys. Nationals only have Harper. That's about.
And the Nationals just lost Wilson Ramos, their catcher, for the rest of the year, which, for a non-baseball person, if you lose your catcher, it affects a lot of stuff with your pitching. They're the ones that call the game, actually call the pitches, so that's a really big blow to the Nationals.
Okay, well.
There are some pitchers that will only use one catcher. And so there's some pitchers that come to teams and they say, if you want me, you're going to have to sign him too. The Cubs have one of those pitchers right now.
Well, coming from a guy who, again, knows nothing about baseball, and I've maybe watched two games this entire season, I'm taking the Nationals.
Good luck. Don't put money on it.
All right, well, when you guys are wrong in a couple of weeks here, I'm going to be able to claim that I know more about you than baseball.
Well,
more about baseball than you guys.
Trevor is obviously the best bettor in this room, so we'll get to that in a second.
I did eat a cupcake, so yeah.
We'll get to that in a second. Yeah, but there is even bigger news in the MLB that we should probably touch on a little bit here. Again, you've probably seen a little bit about Jose Fernandez. For a baseball fan, this is like the saddest news we could possibly get. Non-baseball fan like you, Jaden, you're probably wondering why is it such a big deal?
I've seen a lot about it on the interwebs.
Yeah, I've seen tons of stuff, read a ton of stories, and it's just sad.
So if I understand, Jose Fernandez, he's what, a second-year pitcher, or is he a rookie?
He's like a third year.
Okay.
But he missed one for like a Tommy John surgery.
So he's a pretty young pitcher, and he's their star.
Yeah, is that fair to say? More or less. You don't really have I think he's number two in the rotation.
He's number one in their rotation. I mean, he's probably number two on the team behind Giancarlo Stanton, who's a beast. But Fernandez was like the guy really in that rotation. Several stats just spewing out. He was the leader in strikeout rate in the majors. I think he had the second best strikeout rate over his career, second only to Clayton Kershaw, which is really good.
So he was in a boat accident.
Yeah, boat accident.
It was fatal. You just hate hearing about stuff like that.
And just taking the statistics aside, you know, here, if you know his story of actually getting into the U.S. to play Major League Baseball, yeah. it's very he did a lot to come over and play.
So really quick synopsis of Fernandez: he tried four times to leave Cuba and was finally successful on that fourth time. He was spent time in prison. He was confronted by Mexican soldiers, I believe, with guns when he tried on that fourth time. Saved his mother from drowning on the third time, which failed. Has an incredible story. Bright young star in the game, 24. He was like leading. He was like the best Cuban in baseball right now. And without him, it's just a massive light, massive hole just left in MLB. It's sad.
Just awful news. I mean, you hear a lot about older players that have retired and, you know, the legends of the game passing away, and that's sad. You know, Muhammad Ali recently and
Arnold Palmer the same day.
Anything like that is just sad, but especially a young up-and-coming star of the game, it's just tragic. And you know, Arnold Palmer on the same day yesterday.
It'd be like, to put it in perspective before we move on here, go back 2 years, Steph Curry's going nuts all over the NBA, and knock on wood that this doesn't happen. But if Steph Curry were to pass away in the NBA, that's close to what Fernandez meant to the MLB.
Yeah. I agree with that. Nice, you know, a young upcoming star that's, you know, been through hardship to get there.
But yeah.
Anyway, that's I feel like we'd be remiss to not at least mention it. But moving on from that to a much lighter note, football is here. And on a much more negative note, never mind.
We owe Trevor a dollar.
I did eat the cupcake last week.
Trevor ate the cupcake.
It was good.
We don't know how he did it.
It was a red velvet.
A red velvet. It was cupcake. A blue demon cupcake.
I would have gone with blue. German chocolate, but so the cupcake. We've started a new segment in part two of our trilogy, known as Bearded Men Podcast. We've started a competition where every week we look through the spreads of games in college football at the games which are supposed to be a blowout. We say 20 points or more is the line, and we'll look through those games, and each of us will take an underdog, and if that underdog does win, you win the pot.
So we put a dollar in each week to that pot, and whoever finally gets that winner underdog takes the entire pot. And last week, Marshall lost to Louisville. I don't even remember who Jaden had, but Trevor, freaking Trevor.
Go Blue Duke Blue Devils over the
Fighting Irish.
Fighting Irish suck this year.
You know, was kind of one of those things that I thought we'd start and the pot would build up and we'd be up to, you know, $15, $20 in the pot before somebody finally got lucky enough to pick a 20-point underdog that actually wins. And Trevor just ruined that.
On the plus side, though, he can't even buy a McDonald's value meal.
So he can buy a McDouble, which is better.
Yeah. No fries, man.
Or toy.
Just get the McDouble with some Big Mac sauce on there. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that's the way to go. Or, now, you're not quite to this point yet since you only won $2, and they raised the price of the McDouble to, like, $1.40 or something like that. But you get a McDouble, and then you get a spicy McChicken, and you stack those things together.
Oh.
What's that called, Jaden?
Moving on.
So eat the cupcake this year, or this week is going to continue. A whole batch of new teams. They all suck even worse than last week.
Yeah.
So do not expect that to happen again, Trevor.
I don't think either of us.
Well, I guess since I won last week, I guess I'll go first. And since I was, you know, a little hungry eating that cupcake, I'll go with rice because I'm still a little hungry. Rice over Southern Mississippi.
I don't think that'll happen, but I don't think mine will happen either. But I'm still going to have to go with Kansas to beat Texas Tech. Only reason I'm doing it is because every other team besides USM is a ranked good team. Texas Tech ain't.
And I am going to go with ULM, the University of Louisiana Monroe, over Auburn. Which, I mean, does anybody know what ULM's mascot is?
I think they're like the Warhawks or something like that.
Warhawks, is that right?
Something with a bird.
I know we played them when we were in the Sun Belt for that one year, back before we went into the WAC.
So, I mean, go ULM. I know Auburn's having somewhat of a down.
They are the Warhawks. Okay. I am awesome.
You got it. That doesn't mean you get it. You don't get it.
You owe me a dollar, right?
Nope. So, I mean, Auburn's having a down year, but they're not going to lose to ULM. The list this week was pitiful.
That's why I picked Kansas.
What's sad is that, unfortunately, our dear Utah State Aggies would be considered a cupcake this week, being a 20-point underdog.
But since we'd all pick Utah State, we decided to just outlaw them.
Yeah, so we're not going to take Utah State. But, I guess we'll see how it goes. This kind of gives those blowout games, makes them a little bit more fun.
Oh, I definitely was keeping an eye on that Marshall game until, like, the first quarter ended.
Yeah.
But let's move on.
Talk about some games that actually matter. I mean,
beyond Kansas, Texas Tech, and the wonder that game is going to be, there's been a lot of good football over the first couple weeks that did not involve Kansas that we should talk about more. So What was your non-Kansas football surprise so far in this season?
We're talking anything goes, biggest surprise of the season.
Besides Lamar Jackson.
Chippewas?
Besides Lamar Jackson.
Chippewas? I could believe that.
You mean the Chippewas in general, or you mean the big surprise win that they had?
Well, in general, they are 3-0. It's, you know, it's kind of... That's kind of good for them.
For a directional Michigan team, that is pretty impressive. But
yeah, I think my biggest surprise has been the Big Ten. That's a conference that every year seems like they get a lot of hype, and then every year they somewhat disappoint. This year they've lived up to it, though. I mean, yeah, you've got your Indiana and Illinois and those teams that are just the sellers.
They're just waiting for basketball season to start.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, there's some really good teams in that conference. You got Michigan, who is 4-0. They've looked very nice. You got Ohio State, who, I mean, I don't even need to say anything else about them. They're 3-0. It's Ohio State. You got Michigan State, who they do have a loss, but they've looked pretty dang nice this whole season. Wisconsin's 4-0.
Who made Michigan State look not that nice this past week.
Exactly. Nebraska is 4-0.
Yeah, there's 27 teams undefeated in FBS. Six of them are in the Big Ten.
Yep.
And Penn State and Michigan State are not in those six teams.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm not just talking about, like, these guys winning games over cupcake teams. They've got some quality wins in there. I would like to brag about the Terrapins a little bit, but they are 3-0 against cupcake teams, so I'll leave them out of this. But I mean, just the Big Ten has been awesome, and I'm really excited to see how everything plays out. I mean, especially like a potential Michigan Ohio State matchup with them both being highly ranked and whatnot. But I mean, even aside from that, just I'm excited to see how Michigan does the rest of the season. I'm excited to see what happens with Michigan State from here on out, how Wisconsin does.
Yeah, I think on the flip side of that, biggest thing that surprises me is the SEC. As you think about it, every year we're like, SEC is going to be the best conference, and it seems every year they live up to that hype.
Mm-hmm.
Except this year where apparently everybody not named Alabama or Texas A&M sucks. I mean, Tennessee is still undefeated. Vanderbilt is not an SEC team. When we say SEC, they are excluded. We love Vanderbilt. But, like, you look at the rest of the conference, Tennessee is undefeated, yeah, but they've looked bad in a lot of games. Alabama and Texas A&M have looked decent, though Texas A&M also hasn't looked terrific in a lot of games. LSU just fired Les Miles. Auburn's, like, 2-2. I mean, it's just not as impressive. I did not see the SEC struggling as much as they did this year.
Were you surprised by the Les Miles firing?
I was. Kind of, you know, he's been there for a while. He's had two national championships. Well, you know, why are they doing it mid-season?
Been to two national championships.
They won one.
He's won one, but he's been to two.
Yeah.
Still, why you know, kind of, something like that, why would you do that, you know, mid-season, you know?
I'd say after last season, how he was pretty much fired, then not fired, and then said, okay, you can still be the coach. After that, this doesn't surprise me that much, especially as bad as LSU has really looked so far. I mean,
they don't have a losing record.
Yeah, but their offense has been terrible. I mean, Leonard Fournette was supposed to be a Heisman frontrunner, and I don't even think he just has not done well. You cannot put forth the coaching job he's done with the talent he has over repeated seasons and expect to keep your job, and I think it just finally caught up with him.
LSU is puzzling to me because, this whole thing is puzzling to me because it seems like for the last 3-4 years, every year you hear Les Miles' name on the coaching hot seat, which I've just never understood because you're looking at a guy who has brought you a national championship. He's taken you to several BCS games back when that was a thing. His worst season that he had was the year after the national championship when they went 8-5. That was the worst season he's had there, which, you know, 8-5 is something Utah State would kill for. But the more I thought about it, LSU is holding themselves to a national championship standard. And with this, they're saying, we are a national championship caliber team. We're getting national championship caliber recruits, which they are. I mean, every year they have one of the top recruiting classes. And, you know, when you look at it like that, it is pretty inexcusable for a coach to go 8-5, 9-4, even in the SEC.
How many of those recruits are because of Les Miles, though? You think they'll lose some of the top-tier recruits because Les Miles is leaving? You know, like how many top-tier recruits do you think Alabama would get if they did fire Nick Saban and somebody else stepped in? Do you think they'd lose all of them, or they'd still get about what they're getting, or maybe just a little less or more? You know,
it's hard to say.
I don't think they'll lose too many because, I mean, it's LSU. They're going to get a great coach to come in anyways after this. I think the biggest reason he got fired, Les Miles, was because, one, he replaced Nick Saban, who won a national championship and then left shortly after to go to the Dolphins, I think, and then ended up at Alabama. And Alabama has consistently just played all over LSU pretty much.
Yeah.
And I just think that's the standard Les Miles was given when he got the job, fair or unfair. And, I mean, nobody can really live up to that. And he just eventually just couldn't live up to it anymore.
I've just got to think that from here, I mean, I really don't see them making a hire before the end of the season, and I think that the rest of their season just kind of turns into hot garbage.
Watch, though. I will say this. Dave Aranda, he was the defensive coordinator here. He's going to be the next coach of LSU.
No, he's not. He'll probably be a coach elsewhere, but he...
Probably not, but I will say that because I want it to happen, and I want to rub it in people's faces when it does.
Speaking of hot garbage... Is BYU going to make a bowl game?
No.
I don't know. I don't think that because who's on their schedule they can actually win now, though. You know?
Bringing it up right now, I'll take you through it for a quick 30 seconds. Their next game is at home versus Toledo. They're 3-point favorites. Toledo's a really good team.
That's a maybe.
Yeah, that's a maybe.
That's a half a win I get.
After that, they go play at Michigan State.
Loss.
At home versus Mississippi State.
Most years that's an easy loss, but this year...
It's a maybe depending on how well Mississippi State plays. At Boise State.
Loss.
That's a loss.
At Cincinnati.
Loss.
I think that's a loss.
Versus Southern Utah.
Should be a win.
They'll win
that. I'll be rooting for Southern Utah.
They'll win that.
And then versus UMass.
Yeah, they'll win that.
Versus Utah State.
It's a loss. Well, I mean, yeah. I want to say loss, I think
even before the game, we'll remove Utah State because we're biased. They are 1-3 right now. Get to 6 wins, they need to win 5 of those 8 games, which means they can't lose more than 3. We just said that there's 3 automatic losses there. So that means of the 5 other games, which like 3 or 4 of them are maybe they can win it, maybe they'll lose. They need to win all of them.
Here's what I'll say. I think that they win one of Mississippi State at home or Toledo this weekend. And I think that they will be fighting for a bowl spot. And likely when we go there, it'll be a team that needs to win to get into a bowl game. So
very likely it could be 2 teams fighting to get into a bowl game.
Exactly.
In that game.
I mean,
I don't want that, but that might be what happens.
Put it this way, if BYU does not make a bowl game, Mountain West gets Poinsettia Bowl back.
I think we get it back. I honestly don't. I don't see BYU getting 5 wins.
We'll
through
see.
The rest of their schedule.
I don't want to focus on that team too much, but I figured that was a point of local interest and something that
brings me a
little bit of pleasure.
At us, people. BYU will not make a bowl game.
Brings me a little bit of pleasure to talk about, I'll be honest.
So let's transition to something that BYU has nothing in, the NFL.
Nicely put.
Well, Dave Sorensen had Daniel Sorensen had an interception for the Chiefs.
Okay, yeah, he got Pitta's doing well, and Kafusi's, well, he's actually injured now. But
hey, Jake Heaps is the third string quarterback
on a practice squad, maybe.
He's the third string quarterback on the Seahawks who keep 2 quarterbacks on their roster.
Hey, but remember, he quit BYU and left.
Okay, I'm so sorry. We gotta stop talking.
We could do this forever.
NFL. Speaking of crappy teams. let me pose this question to you. Imagine you're the Browns. We've all seen the infamous jersey, which I guess was retired after the Cavaliers won a championship, which I just think is garbage because that's their excuse of saying that the Browns are never going to be good, so we're just going to get rid of this. But the Browns, there was a jersey in Cleveland that has a list of their like 30-something quarterbacks that they've had over the past 10 or 15 years, and it would just keep growing. Early in the season, there was a 5-game stretch between last season and this season where they started 5 different quarterbacks.
Isn't that still on for next week, and it could be 6?
Who did they start last week?
Cody Kessler.
And he'll be back, right?
I think so. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't want to spend too much time talking about the Browns, but I just want to set the stage. Imagine you're the Browns, and you've had this many quarterback woes, and you're allowed to take one of the, I won't say rookies, but one of the inexperienced quarterbacks in the NFL. So we'll say a player who is either a rookie or a...
8 starts or less.
A player who started in 7 or 8 games or less. And you can choose from any of those quarterbacks. Who are you taking on your squad?
Honestly, if I'm the Browns, I keep tanking until I can get Lamar Jackson in 2018. Then they win a Super Bowl. Right now, if I have to pick, it's hard to not say Carson Wentz. I mean, the guy's just built like a solid quarterback. He's accurate. He hasn't turned the ball over yet, which is amazing. And, I mean, they even beat the Steelers like 34-3, the Eagles did. I don't know how you cannot pick Carson Wentz.
Well, you know that I think that he is a player that greatly benefited from being in a pro system in college at North Dakota State. They use the pro-style offense.
Pro principles.
So I'm not positive that I'm sold on Carson Wentz yet. I would probably agree with you that he'd be the first guy I'd take because I see all kinds of crazy potential for him, and he's proven that he's a great player. But, there's a few other guys out there too.
I just think with the other guys, I think there's some that have more potential, but they also have bigger flaws that you can see. Carson Wentz doesn't really have a ton of flaws that I see, other than that he takes too many hits.
What about Dak Prescott?
I don't like SEC.
So is that the only reason why you wouldn't take if Prescott played in the Pac-12?
I also don't trust anybody named Dakota.
Okay, but let me say this though. Hey, well, Carson Wentz played in North Dakota, so.
Oh shoot, man! I didn't think about that.
Okay, look at it like this though. Dak Prescott, and I'm not necessarily saying I'm taking Dak Prescott, but he was a monster in college, and Mississippi State was a pretty solid team his entire tenure there while he was leading that team. And now he's gone, and I mean, given that's not the only thing that's changed with the team, but now that team is awful.
We think that BYU has a chance against them, and that says enough.
Yeah, so I would look at that and think, you know, maybe this is the kind of impact that a guy like Dak Prescott can have, and he's looked good with the Cowboys so far.
What'd you have to say about Jared Goff? You know, he hasn't really been in to show anything yet, but
the one thing I saw, and this is credit to the Ringer, he came from a spread offense, and we don't really see that really convert to the NFL that much as pro offenses do. You think about it, Carson Wentz, pro principles in that kind of smorgasbord offense they run in North Dakota State. Dak Prescott had a couple pro principles in there. Trevor Siemian, all these guys had some experience with a pro style offense.
What do you know about North Carolina State's offense?
North Carolina State.
Isn't that... Oh.
Northwestern, no. You mean?
Well, okay. Siemian went to Northwestern.
Okay.
And, no, it was the third stringer
North Dakota State.
No. The third stringer for the Patriots.
Oh, Jacoby Brissett.
Jacoby Brissett.
Well, he did have a little bit of pro principles. I remember that from, like, the broadcast that they had for the game and whatnot, but... That's one of the big clues I at least look at for a quarterback transitioning to the NFL. I don't think Goff has that. I mean, yes, you have Aaron Rodgers and some people like that, but still. Spread offenses don't translate as much.
I'm with you. I'm not sold on Goff, and I don't think that they should have taken him in the draft. I'm glad they did because I don't care for the Rams. But
especially not that they're in LA.
You know, to be honest. Here's my dark horse, though. I like Trevon Boykin. There's not enough NFL data to really back that up. But, man, I loved watching that guy play in college. He was awesome. And I always just felt like when I was watching him, I always felt like he was going to be a solid NFL quarterback. And he got into the game last week for the Seahawks, and he did awesome. You couldn't even tell. I mean, if you weren't looking at the jersey numbers and the height, and, you know, if you were just looking at the player, it wasn't much different from Russell Wilson being in there.
Well, how about this? How about the Browns just go with the guy they drafted as a wide receiver, as in Terrell Pryor? He did have a touchdown pass, a touchdown catch, and a touchdown run.
Well, somebody has to score in that offense. That doesn't mean they're good.
I will take him over Johnny Manziel.
True that. I'll take top three, Carson Wentz. Then I take Trevor Siemian. Then I take Jimmy Garoppolo.
You're that high on Siemian.
He's looked really good when you think about it. Big thing for me with a quarterback is you do not turn the ball over. And Siemian, I think, he does better at that than I think some of the other quarterbacks, I think.
I'm selling on Siemian, but...
Plus, I mean, this past game, he had like 4 touchdown passes, and some of those deep throws he had were nice. They were beauts.
Okay. There's been some surprise teams in the NFL this year. I think that, you know, we talked a little bit about the Eagles, and they're probably the biggest surprise team. Let's go through the 3-0 teams in the NFL that we have right now, and tell me whether you're buying or selling them. So, are you buying as a playoff contender, or as a playoff team, a team that has a real shot at making the playoffs? Are you buying or selling the Eagles?
I'm selling, to be honest. I like Carson Wentz, but he's still a rookie. There's not a ton of talent across that roster, and they play in a division which you never know what's going to happen. So. I can easily see the Cowboys coming back to win that or something.
I'd have to go with a sell on that, because that's, you know, there's, you know, that sometimes the Redskins, they look, sometimes Redskins look great, sometimes they look horrible. Sometimes the Giants look great, sometimes they look horrible. It's just that division.
I'm selling. Before the season, I would have told you that they were probably one of my very last place teams in the NFL, and I didn't expect anything from them then. And yeah, they've looked really great. You can't deny what they did against Pittsburgh, but
then their other two games are Chicago and Cleveland.
I don't think that they get in. I think the Redskins are going to win that division. But how about the Vikings? 3-0, and bye. I mean, after losing Adrian Peterson and after losing a starting quarterback right before the season and having to sign Sam Bradford. I was going to say Nick Foles.
That was a terrible trade, but it looks really good now. I'm buying on them only because the last 2 weeks, you look at how well they played against the Packers, who are in their division. So really nice that you're playing well against them. And then they dismantled the Panthers.
Yep.
I mean, that was impressive.
I'm going to buy them too. I actually buy them to win the division or just buy as a wild card?
I'd buy them to get a first-round bye, honestly.
I don't think they win the division, but I think they get a wild card. They've got, in my opinion, I mean, it's close between them and the Broncos, but I think the Vikings have the best defense in the NFL.
Best fantasy defense right now.
How about the Broncos?
Bye.
Bye. That's another one at like the NFC East type. Conference this year, division this year, I believe. So
there's a lot of good teams in that division. I mean, even the Chargers have looked really good. I think the Chiefs win that division, but I'll take them as a wild card team for sure. I mean, the Broncos they've given no reason that they don't look good this season. So how about the Patriots? This is
bye. They don't even have Tom Brady, and they're still amazing.
I mean, yeah, I don't even think we need to say that.
Look at their division.
And yeah. The Ravens.
Sell.
This is tough for me because I'm a Ravens fan. Mine does kind of say sell a little bit because they've been shaky, but I actually do buy them. I think give this team a little bit longer to kind of gel. Elvis Dumer will back from injury. The defense will get a little bit better. Part of me is just convincing myself, but bye.
Sell, but not by much. They could very well be competing for wild card. I don't think they win the division, but they could very well be competing for a wild card. We'll see what happens there.
They are leading the division, which makes me happy right now.
Okay, and last question for you. Who is going to be, at the end of the season, considered the worst team in the NFL?
By record?
Just when all of the national media outlets are releasing their final power rankings, who's going to be number 32 on that list? I'll start. Mine might surprise some people, and I'm sorry to my dear friend Derek if he happens to be listening to this show, but I think the Bears, they've been terrible this season. I have no reason to think that they win more than two games.
I'll kind of follow up. This is really difficult because I think the Cleveland Browns are on the upside. One of my hottest takes right now is I think the Cleveland Browns will be a good contender within 5-6 years. But end of this year, they're still going to be the worst team.
I have to go with the Browns also because I think that Chicago will actually be able to win more that Hoyer's in rather than Cutler. So,
well, I mean, we'll see. They got a game against Detroit this week, so if they lose that.
Well, Detroit's been pretty good, actually, so far. I mean, offense has been kind of fluctuating between really good and terrible, but they're at least better than Cleveland and St. Louis and Chicago.
I guess we'll find out. So we should probably get things wrapped up. We're coming up towards the end of our time here. As always, I'm going to go over the Utah State home schedule this week just to kind of – it's good to be aware of what's going on and know of what's going on, especially for some of the sports that we don't hear about as much. So this week we have the women's volleyball team here at home. I talked about this. We've got them here on Thursday and Saturday. Thursday, they've got Colorado State at 7 p.m. And Saturday, they'll be in town as well with another conference matchup. Friday, the soccer team, they'll be on the road against Air Force. I was thinking that was a home game, but that's not.
Football's, of course, on the road.
Football, yeah, of course. They're going to be out on the road destroying Boise State, as we all know. So women's volleyball, they'll be back Saturday night against Wyoming at 6 p.m. And that's really about it this weekend. A lot of soccer teams on the road, and tennis has got road stuff going on. So if you can make it out to those volleyball games, they're going to be awesome.
I'll be there for sure. I'll be calling both those games on Mountain West Network, so if you can't make the game, at least watch it.
I'll be out of town. I wish I'll probably be watching on Mountain West Network because I'm going to be out of town. So
I'll probably be watching college football. I'm not going to lie.
You can watch both.
I could have multiple college football games on at one time.
Okay, but on Thursday night. Come on.
Okay, Thursday night maybe. Come on. Well, there's Thursday night football though.
Who is it this week, though, on Thursday Night Football?
It's never anybody good.
I think it's Detroit, actually, this week.
Pass. Okay, anyway, we should probably wrap things up here. So this, unfortunately, as I mentioned, is our last episode. We're going to be coming back with another name, another show. But for now, this is the end of 2.5 Beards. For those of you who have listened, Logan, Derek, and if there are anybody else, I sincerely apologize. Thank you for listening.
And we will all be re-resurrected in another name that we have not come up with yet.
At another time.
We're sorry you listened to this.
The next show will be better.
We promise. Kind of.